So I do extension outreach with master gardeners, with gardeners, with arborists, other landscape professionals, and as you probably all know, there's a bunch of really bad information out there. So my goal has been to really address a lot of the garden myths and other just bad information, trying to get people to be more critical thinkers about gardening information. So what we did, a colleague of mine and I at Washington State, is we put together an extension manual. It's peer-reviewed, it's a free download, and it really is a curriculum because it allows the learner to acquire specific knowledge and goals, knowledge and skills. So this is something that on the handout, there is a link to that. You can download it. I also brought some print copies, and I will explain to you how you can have your own print copy if you do one little thing for me. So what I want to briefly talk about is the sources of information that I talk about when I'm educating people through extension outreach, along with my CRAAP test. And then briefly about correlation and causation, which with online journals and open access and everything else and some really bad stuff that's out there, it's critical to get our audience, whether they're college students or whether they're the public, to really start thinking about what is correlation and what is causation. Types of information. That in my job, I'm an urban horticulturist, and so I'm really looking at management of home gardens and landscapes. And I introduce my students to scientific information, which, as you know, is peer-reviewed with an academic audience, and might include something like hort technology. So that's kind of the gold standard in terms of quality information. The gray literature is not peer-reviewed. It's more intended for a professional audience and might include something like American Nurseryman, which could be good information, but it's not reviewed for content. And then finally, there's the popular sources of information that are not peer-reviewed and has more of a public audience, and that might be something like organic gardening. So the reason I mention these three when I'm talking to my audience is because I've published in all three of those journals. And so it's not that the journals themselves are necessarily bad sources, it's just you really have to know who it is that's writing and whether they are reliable sources themselves. So all these things have their place. I use them all myself, but again, I tell my audience they have to be very careful about which of these things have been through any kind of content review. And invariably, when I'm busy busting myths, which I have been doing for about 20 years now, I'll have somebody in my group that will say, I've been using such and so for 50 years, and it's always worked for me. So that's the anecdote that you always have to fight. And rather than fight it, I say, it works for you, and that's great. We all have our beliefs. And oftentimes, those anecdotes will lead to new research. And as a matter of fact, a lot of things I ended up researching were because I heard people say over and over and over and over again, Epsom salts is the best thing since sliced bread in terms of my plants. And I've actually gotten some research done on that now with data that show no difference between Epsom salts and water, and I will be publishing that. So this is why it can be really valuable, and I tell people anecdotal information is not bad, but it's only one person's observations. And what you have to have is experimental processes to look at these relationships. And so I go into, with my audiences and in this manual, controlling variability, replicating treatments, repeating experiments, and finally requesting confirmation through peer review. And so we start talking about how information can be verified and vetted, hopefully, through peer review, although I go ahead and tell them that peer review is not always 100%, and we look at what can go wrong during that peer review process. But what I developed in this manual you can use is the CRAAP test, which, as I tell my groups, you're taking this raw information, you're putting it through a sieve. Hopefully you get gold, but sometimes you get crap. And what CRAAP stands for is credibility, relevance, so this is relevance to your audience and what they are doing, in my case, with home gardens and landscapes, accuracy of the information, and finding the purpose. Is the purpose of the publication or the presentation to share information, or is it a sales pitch? And especially in the field of gardening and landscape, there's a lot of snake oil products out there because there is no regulation on these things. Unless it's labeled as a pesticide or a fertilizer, it's all fair game. So I have to really get people to look at this stuff carefully, figure out why are you hearing about this? Is it something that's really worthwhile, or is someone trying to pick your wallet? So I'll go through and talk about different types of products and practices, most of which fall under the category of no supporting science, meaning either there's no research behind them, or that it's inconsistent research with oftentimes negative results, or it's poor quality research. And then there's a whole category of things that I kind of put into the category of misapplied sciences. And so these are things that work really well in agricultural settings where you're doing crop production where maximizing yield is the goal. And say this is really different than what most people are doing with their home gardens and landscapes, where sustainability of land may be more important. So the application of the science is important. And finally, over-extrapolated science. And we all know what this is. We've seen reports of this, you know, in really high-quality journals about something that works wonderfully in a lab situation, but when you move it to a field, it doesn't work. And this is, it happened with Harpin. You all may remember that. You know, the guy was on the cover of Nature magazine with the Harpin protein, and they tried to make it something that would work in terms of turning on plant defenses in the landscape. It doesn't work. And there's reasons for this. And so we go through this so people understand why good science in the lab doesn't necessarily translate to good science in practical situations. Then because what's happened with open access journals and predatory journals and all those things that we hate as academics, I do go into talking about not so good science, especially the poor quality research. And the hallmarks of the poor quality research, really common when you have authors that don't have expertise in the field. They may have a PhD, but it's not in your field. And this is what I tell people. I don't have a PhD in neurobiology. I'm not going to tell you about that field. It's not my field. PhD is not the be-all and end-all. It's what that PhD is in. Oftentimes, these authors will conflate correlation with causation, and it just shows author bias. And often, if not most of the time, these are really marginal journals, oftentimes with no peer review, oftentimes predatory pay-for-play journals. So this becomes really fun, and if you get into this, and you can use this not just for extension audiences, but it would be great for incoming undergraduates to learn how to kind of filter through the stuff they hear about things that are relevant to horticulture and they haven't really thought about before. But I mean, maybe this isn't such a great thing. Maybe it's just all folklore and home remedies. So this is the one that I always use. It always gets, especially the master gardeners, really riled up, and actually any audience riled up, because everybody's seen this on social media, that glyphosate causes human disease. Now, we have lawsuits that have said that this is legitimate, and it's just a huge problem. This is one of the papers where it all started in 2013, a journal called Entropy. The second author, Stephanie Seneff, is the one who has been responsible for these. So these types of articles, you see the name, and even I, as a scientist with a very strong background in basic sciences, cell biology and biochemistry, you read this, and it's all a bunch of gobbledygook, and it's designed to baffle. So, you know, if you can't dazzle them with brilliance, you baffle them with BS. And that was a saying back when I was in graduate school, and it really applies to things like this particular paper. So this paper ended up telling people to worry about all of these various human ailments that were caused by using glyphosate, and it led to memes like that. And so this is what about, it's getting better now, but it used to be about 50% of the emails I would get were people worried about glyphosate causing all of these problems. So you really have to get into these papers to figure out where did this start, is it legitimate, and get your audience to understand why, you know, their fears have been overblown. So you get to play detective, and audiences love doing this. I mean, everybody loves playing detective and doing some work on the internet to figure out what's going on. So the first thing, the credibility of the crap test. Who is the author? What are her qualifications? Well, she's at MIT. That's not a bad thing. That's a really good thing. You keep on picking and digging. She has a PhD in computer science. Not plant science, not soil science, nothing having anything to do with biology, biochemistry, anything. She's a computer scientist. That's not our field. She's not qualified to talk about this information. She doesn't have a co-author who knows anything about it either. It's published in the Journal of Entropy, which I don't know if you're familiar with. I love the name because it's just perfect. It's a predatory online pay-for-play journal. You can publish anything you want if you pay them money. It is not peer-reviewed. And you can find this out easily on the internet. My favorite phrase in the article was that this was an example of exogenous semiotic entropy, which is another one of those phrases where I just couldn't untangle it. So Google is your friend, quotation marks around that three-word phrase. And at that point, when I was looking at this in 2013, it appeared one place in this journal, and that was it. So they made it up. Made up this exogenous semiotic entropy phrase, and that everyone, you know, was throwing that around as being this problem with glyphosate. And finally, you know, you do enough digging and you start really, you know, getting the nails in the coffin. And there was an environmental group that interviewed this scientist and they asked her how she was able to figure all of this out when hundreds, if not thousands, of articles had shown the relative safety of glyphosate around non-target organisms. And she said, so basically what I do is I read papers and I process them with a computer to help me understand them and interpret them and generalize and build a story. And this is when the meter goes off scale. This is when the crap test has done its job. And when you get your audience to see this and to see how they've been bamboozled and their fears have been overblown, it doesn't work for everybody. Some people are going to be anti-glyphosate, doesn't matter. But the people who are thinkers, who are willing to think about the information, this is when you've got them. So then you end up, you know, because everyone, you know, gets unhappy at talking about glyphosate, so you got to bring the humor back in. So you have to talk a little about correlation causation. Her papers were full of these things where, you know, glyphosate, use of glyphosate with the increase in autism, how there's this wonderfully correlated curve. And so obviously glyphosate was causing the autism upswing. And so you talk about correlation and that sometimes you can't do studies, obviously you can't feed glyphosate to pregnant women. And sometimes correlation does pan out, but you have to get rid of all the other possibilities first. So it goes back to logic 101. You know, A causes B or B causes A. Yeah. Or they can come from a common cause, but they don't cause each other. Or they're completely coincidental. And there's a wonderful website, if you haven't seen it before, called Spurious Correlations. How many people have seen this? Good. This is the best place because it has graphics like this where it has a perfect correlation between the amount of cheese consumption in the U.S. and number of people who die by becoming entangled in their bed sheets. It's great. It gets people laughing. It releases the tension, and they do see there's all kinds of things that just happen to occur at the same time at the same rate. So you need to tell people, if you've got a paper that's at odds with the majority of what other papers are saying, it has to withstand increased scrutiny. It has to meet a really high bar. So anyway, I have a lot of online resources, and I would invite any of you who are doing this kind of thing, if you'd like to join our little group of garden professors, and I'll tell you about that in a second, but this is where this particular free download is. It's on our WCU Gardening page. There is one section called Other Pertinent Publications. You click on that, and you'll find the download. And you can see the big check mark, peer-reviewed. It is a peer-reviewed manual. All of our stuff is updated at least every 5 years. So if you're interested in seeing and using this, wait, I'll be here afterwards. I have a big stack of them. All I'm going to ask for in response is that you send me information on how you've used it, who your audience is, how many people, what you did, because that helps me in my reporting as an extension person. And then we do have the Garden Professors blog. Anybody familiar with Garden Professors? Excellent. Some of you know us. So, and one of my colleagues, Jim Downer, is here from California. We write a blog every week with interesting stuff that has to do with science and gardens, and we have a Facebook page and a Facebook group which now has over 23,000 people in it, and our stated goal is this is a science-based discussion group only, and this has grown exponentially. Actually, Jim is going to be giving a talk on this on Wednesday to talk about that a little bit more. So thank you very much. Time for questions?
One question.
Okay.
We can take one question.
I talked so fast they couldn't keep up. Thank you.
Thank you.